The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
Another Tentacle Tuesday has come at last, and our story begins to unfold as we learn about things that happen around the detective. These things aren't mere distractions or ramblings, but have significance, as we need you to understand the darkness, understand that there's no safe place to hide, and that no one is safe at all. Tonight, we begin to see what those ramifications are for our Geraldine Hicks. And we return to see how our hero Detective Stevens handles the wrath of Igatsu and the death of so many of his friends and colleagues. Before returning to our story, let me remind you that this podcast does contain images of graphic violence, child endangerment, and a few choice curse words now and then. Now, grab your tentacles, an ice-cold drink! Maybe Kraft's infamous tentacles and cheese as we delve deeper into the darkness with Chapter 11, The Captured.
The musty smell of dirt and moss were the first things that Hicks noticed as she came to. That, and she felt cold and damp. Her neck hurt immensely, making it tough to turn her head. Everything swam as she tried to regain focus. Then, trying to move, she felt the taut binds of a rope holding her to a chair. She jerked her bonds, testing their strength. Someone had done their handiwork. She could barely move her wrist or feet. Taking a deep breath, she began to put things back together. Mark had taken her to the morgue, convinced that something was odd about the Thomas bodies, and then... Then she remembered the cold, hard look of murder in the eyes of Claire Thomas as she plunged the scalpel into Mark's neck. She rushed forward to try to save him, but only got caught up herself. The ease in which she had grabbed her and held her in the air as Mark's eyes went dark. She felt helpless in her grip. She began to cry and quickly stiffened up. Crying wouldn't save her. She was stronger than that. Her vision began to clear, so she strained her neck to get a good look at where she was. Shovel marks lined the walls and where they had been used to smooth out the floors. She could make out the roots of various plants, and water was seeping from someplace as it slowly dripped into a pool near the wood chair where she sat tied up under a solitary lamp that swayed back and forth with the breeze coming in from some unseen nearby passage. The walls of the room were lined with rusty utility shelves containing a few mason jars, books, dried herbs, and flowers. That and a few old dusty candles. The mason jars seemed most curious to her. Most of them were empty, but one contained a firefly? That seemed to be an unlikely thing to be kept under the earth, but there it was, a small, moving ball of light. Sometimes it would bounce around the jar as if it was trying to get out. Other times it would sink to the bottom, as if in despair. "Boy, Jerry," she said to herself, "you really got caught up in some..." "Hello?" It was the sound of a child. A boy, maybe. "Hello, Alex? Is that you? I can't see anything," the voice continued.
"Hello?"
she responded, unsure if she was losing her mind. Then she noticed a mason jar. The ball of light was pressed hard against a part of the glass facing her. "You don't sound like Alex," the voice said, sounding despondent, and then began to sink to the bottom of the jar.
"No, sorry, I'm not. Who are you?"
I'm Michael. Michael Thomas. I've been stuck here, waiting for my friend, Alex."
"Michael?"
"Yes, I live on Decanter. Near the edge of the wood? Do you know where I am? I can't see anything. It's so dark in here."
"No, Michael. Sorry, I don't."
"Oh.
Who's Alex?"
She's my only friend. We were celebrating my 12th birthday party when she disappeared. Then everything went black.
She began to remember the call. That was the house where Alex Kutchma had been found.
Michael, do you mean Alex Kutchma?
Yes, yes, do you know her? My mother promised me that she'd bring her back to me. She says that's the reason I can't see anything. Not even her. She says it was because I was bad.
Bad?
Yeah, I didn't tell my parents she was a girl. Apparently I made Ikyatsu very mad at us.
Ikyatsu? Who's that?
He's an ancient god. He roams the in-between, feeding on the lost.
I'm not sure I understand.
No, you probably wouldn't. You're just some stupid norm. But Alex was special. Mom promised me, if I behaved, I will see her again. Soon.
Michael?
Yes?
I don't want to scare you, but your friend's in the hospital. She's very sick.
Liar!
I'm not lying, Michael.
Yes, you are. You have to be. My mother wouldn't lie to me, she...
Then, the remnants of the image of his mother snarling at him as the orange and blue Mets hat rolled back through the fireplace as she screamed at him.
You stupid child! You've doomed us all!
Hicks could hear him crying.
Mother, sister, father, they all got hurt because of me.
No, Michael, that's not so.
How would you know? Why? Why would my mother say she hates me? Why? I didn't know. I didn't know she wanted me. I didn't. She wanted me to have friends. She...
The sound of footsteps coming down a metal stairway alerted them, and Michael quickly became quiet and returned to the bottom of his mason jar. Claire emerged from the far end of the room, carrying a lantern. She grinned maliciously.
Oh, you're awake. This is good,
Claire said, giving a half an eye over to the mason jar. She suspected that that foolish child of hers had been chatting with her captive.
What do you want from me, witch?
Witch? What an overused vulgar term. I am a sister of the Kadric Order, a doll given life by our mistress, Lady Cassandra.
Who?
Oh, don't worry. You'll be meeting her soon. She's going to rip out that useless soul of yours and stick it in a mason jar. Then your empty body will be a doll just like me. Then you can keep that annoying brat company till you both fade away out of existence for all I care.
Mother,
the little boy called out, now projecting himself as a spirit in front of her.
You promised me.
Oh, I lied, Michael. I was only using you in the hopes of drawing that girl's soul to you. But we've located that now. Soon, she'll be trapped like you in a mason jar. We only wanted to ensure that it didn't re-inhabit that body of hers before we got to use it for our benefit. And to my surprise, that stupid mystic is bringing her empty vessel right to us. So a two for one. Using your friend's body, I can restore my darling little Wendy. And then I no longer need you.
Mother, you can't.
That's where you're wrong, boy. I can and I will.
I hate you. I hope it gets you and devours your soul.
Ah, but you see, my dear.
Now showing the child the sewn scar running down her body.
He already has. But Lady Cassandra promised me another chance, even though I was such a naughty girl.
The boy's spiritual presence began to fade and flicker, forcing him to return to the jar. She turned away from them both.
Bye-bye, Michael and Jerry, right? Please keep my stupid son entertained until tonight's high mass.
Fucking bitch,
Jerry murmured to herself. Claire left out a cackle and ascended up the stairs and back to the world above. Michael now sat at the bottom of the jar, crying.
I'm sorry, Alex.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
The detective arrived at the site. His body was shaking as he looked upon the remains of the Montgomery Police Department. The roof had collapsed and all the windows had been blown out. The front doors lay at the bottom of the steps, and the columns that once held the old gas lamps looked like mangled pipes in stone. Several engines arrived. He could hear the firefighters calling out to each other as they began to fight the blaze.
Make sure those gas lines are shut down. I need assistance over here. Make sure you take extreme caution, the chief commanded. There could still be survivors in there.
Then he saw the detective and rushed over.
Stevens, he called out.
Pausing, he turned to him, hoping for good news.
Chief, any survivors?
He shook his head.
So far, only one. The EMTs are looking him over.
Thanks, Chief. Do you have any idea what happened?
Stevens asked, trying to take it all in.
We suspect a gas line explosion. We think it could be a ripple effect from earlier tonight. I heard you were involved in that. Detective Donaldson, too. How is he?
The doctor says he'll be fine. They're doing surgery on him now to remove some wood fragments.
Thank God, right? The chief said.
Absolutely, he agreed, and then asked, Do you have an ID on that survivor?
Oh, yeah. He was a big man. I think it was Detective...
Rogers. Of all the people that had survived, he thought to himself.
Yeah, I think so.
The detective drew his gun and started to make his way across the front of the station and down towards the ambulance. He could see a couple of EMTs working on the detective. He could hear the chief calling out from behind him.
Stevens, what's wrong? Hey!
Another rumble came from within the wreckage, and he turned his attention back to his men in the fire.
Get some more hoses on that section. Give it everything we got!
The detective's mind raced. He wondered how many of his fellow officers were dead because of this man. Most likely the chief and Death Sergeant Daniels were gone. The chief had been in his office waiting for him to come back, and Daniels was covering for Hicks since he had taken his children trick-or-treating. Another fatherless family because of the cult and because of the Kadrick Order. He looked around desperately for Hicks. He half expected to see her here too, digging through the debris. She did live within walking distance of the station. Then he remembered the voice and the warning. Could Hicks have come back? Could she be buried here too? Rage began to fill him as a blur of faces ran past him towards the burning building. Now his mind, his eyes, were set on one thing and one thing only, and he was sitting there, half smiling, chatting it up with the EMT.
Over here, a voice called out of the darkness.
Detective Rogers felt several hands lifting him up off the cement steps. His head was still spinning from the concussion of the explosion, but he knew better not to panic. No one knew of his betrayal, no one alive, that is. So he didn't need the fear of being caught. As a matter of fact, if he played it right, he'd be seen as a hero, a shining light of the force, and instead of just being detective, he could be chief. Oh, this would work out nicely. He just had to play along, use their mindless drone mentalities against them. A young man took a small penlight and flashed it into his eyes.
Detective Rogers, right?
Yeah. What happened? Trying not to sound amused by the irony of it all.
Looks like a gas explosion, the man said. Second one tonight,
the young EMT said as he helped him over to the ambulance.
Thanks, kid. I appreciate the help. I really got walloped by that explosion, Tim said.
You sure did, sir. I'm going to send you over to St. Teresa's for an MRI, okay?
Neither saw the approaching shadow of Detective Stevens.
That won't be necessary,
Warren called out, disgusted at the very sight of Detective Rogers. Detective Rogers went cold.
No, that voice. It can't be. He should be dead.
The young man looked up at the disheveled-looking man in a trench coat, pointing his gun directly at Detective Rogers.
Now, step away from him. I don't want to take a chance of you getting hurt, kid. Sir, this man's barely hurt and needs medical...
And before he could finish, Detective Rogers had him by the neck. The cold, hard look on Detective Rogers' face as he slowly turned in the direction of Detective Stevens.
Hey, Warren.
I thought you were dead. Let him go, Tim. I can't do that, friend. The young man was clawing at the big man's hand, trying to force him off as he was beginning to turn blue. Now, drop the gun, Warren, and we'll take a walk together. The detective swallowed hard. If he shot Tim, he might hit the EMT. And if he hesitated any longer, this poor kid would be dead in a few more minutes. I can tell you where to find Hicks, he said with an incredulous smile. His face was full of extreme cruelty. The detective placed his gun on the ground and kicked it over towards the ambulance. Rogers twisted his hands cruelly and watched as the EMT dropped to the ground like a sack of potatoes and then picked up the gun. You didn't have to kill him. Sure I did. There'd be no fun in this if I can't kill a few of you in the process. He pointed to the rear of the ambulance. Get in, Warren. Another EMT came from around the front, oblivious to what was happening. Hey, Joel! His eyes were focused on his smartphone. A shot rang out and the young man looked up before he stumbled back and hit the ground. Get in, Tim said again, this time with a sneer. I don't want to have to ask again. The detective approached. He didn't like this. He had lost control of his temper and now the situation. His only hope was that the fire chief was still paying attention. That, or the shot that Tim had just fired off. It definitely should have caught someone's attention, even in all this chaos. Oh, and Warren, to make sure you don't get fresh when I'm driving. He clubbed Detective Stevens over the head with the butt of the gun. Then Tim tossed him in the back of the ambulance, followed by the two bodies. He was hoping that in all of this, that it would take a little bit for anyone to figure out what had happened. He figured he could make it look like the ambulance was headed for St. Teresa's. He climbed in. It was a little different from the police cruiser, but that wasn't going to be an issue. He could still drive it. He started it up and turned on the siren before pulling away from the station. As he hoped, with everyone so focused on the fire and searching for bodies, no one was paying attention to a lone ambulance leaving the site. With a smile of satisfaction, he drove away. He had escaped with his prey in hand. In some ways, he was happier this way. They'd have a full day ahead of them. He and Master Rune could take turns torturing Detective Stevens. And this coming night would be the last night of the new moon. There would be one more high mass, one more night of atonement. He caught his reflection in the mirror. A nasty crack had developed in his false skin, and he could see the shadow-like thing underneath. He'd have to fix that. But first, he'd have to put an end to the detective. Maybe, he thought to himself, they could even tear out the detective's soul and place him inside and make sure that the detective was a servant of the cult. Yes, he definitely liked how things had worked out.
Hicks seems to be in some real trouble and unusual company, doesn't she? Claire, you're surely not going to get the Mother of the Year award. And Detective, you lost your cool. Your gun and now two more lives. Not very hero-like, not at all. And Detective Rogers, you seem to have quite the plan for our detective. Too bad that next week we're returning to find out what little Wendy has in store for Miss Kutchma. And lo and behold, we learned something about Alex Kutchma's fate as well. In next week's episode, Chapter 12, The Labyrinth.